Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. I am really pleased that I have in the studio today one of Astoria's fabulous women, a woman who was honored during Astoria's bicentennial by the AAUW, American Association of University Women, as one of the 100 women who made Astoria what it is in the last 200 years. Today in the studio, I have Rosemary Johnson. She is Astoria's city planner. She's been with the city of Astoria for 35 years. 13 years, she's served as our planner, and she is retiring, although fortunately staying in Astoria and will continue to be involved in the community. And today we're going to talk about her career and her thoughts on Astoria today, the future. And thank you so much for being here, Rosemary.
Thank you for having me.
I'm just really, really pleased. So, Rosemary, how did you become such a part of Astoria's history now? What happened? Tell us about where were you born and how did you get here?
Well, I actually started in Baltimore, Maryland, a small community of a million people. And I lived there till I was 21 when my family moved to Virginia. And being a dutiful German daughter, I went with my father to Virginia because you did not live on your own back then until you were married. And we went to Virginia to a county that had a population of 700. So it was a cultural shock for me. And so we lived on the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia. And that's where I started to work for the National Park Service, where I met my husband, a park ranger. And after we got married, we worked there on the parkway for a while. And then we were transferred to Death Valley, California. We wanted a western remote area, and we sure got it. Death Valley was an experience. I lived there in the years where there was no television, no radio. We had to go an hour for a telephone. We had to go an hour away to get our mail and 4 hours away to get groceries and any kind of services.
Were there any other people living close to you?
Everyone was there seasonally, and at the top of the season, there were 25 of us, and that was including kids. And so we had a little family-type group, and you didn't have VCRs and DVDs back then. We used to have to rent reel-to-reel movies, and we would save up money, and we'd all pick a movie and get it shipped in and watch that same movie about 20 times over a weekend and then have to ship it back. And that was $75 to get one movie.
Oh, my gosh. Did you like living in Death Valley?
I loved it. You had people. It was not interaction with TV as people do today, or you just sit there with your DVDs. Instead, it was interaction with each other. We would get together at night and read stories to each other while somebody was folding laundry, or maybe somebody had a craft that they could teach someone. I learned karate. Someone else taught guitar. So we just had a lot of people interaction.
And also the beauty of the desert. I mean, that people yes. don't realize it's not just a vast empty space. There's wildlife, there are flowers. It's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. And in the spring with the flowers, you would not believe how colorful the desert can be. It was hot. I've been there up to 127 degrees. And you learned how to acclimatize and to live in that type of atmosphere. But then there was kind of a shock to my furniture when we got transferred to Astoria and the moisture up here.
You moved from being a lizard to suddenly being
a fish.
I don't know, a fish, yes.
Yes. Astoria, I went from 2 inches of rain a year to the 70 to 90 inches in Astoria. So it was quite a shock to our system, but I loved both ways. I love Astoria's weather. I don't mind the rain. And so we moved up here, and my husband's job, you generally transfer every 3 to 5 years. But we fell in love with Astoria. And a few months after I moved here, I got a job. And how I got the job is kind of interesting. But we decided I had a good job, and he loved it here. Our kids were starting to grow up, and we decided we were going to stay here. So he made the choice with his job to not advance, because you have to transfer to advance. And so he stayed as the chief ranger at Fort Clatsop and retired from there in 2001. But I got my job. It was a rainy, cold December day. And the parking control officer position was open. And I thought, yeah, it sounds kind of interesting. So I walk up to the parking control officer, my girlfriend now, Wanda, and I said, do you like your job? And she thought it was the craziest thing. Here's this woman walks up to her on this cold, wet day to ask her if she likes her job. And the rest is history. I got the parking control officer job, and I had that for 8 years. It was an interesting time in my life because you were public enemy number one. I've had rocks thrown at me. I had one lady for a single ticket that was a $5 ticket said she hoped they would slit my throat some night in a dark alley.
Oh my God,
I was run over shocking. By a car deliberately, and it was not a fun job sometimes. I had pneumonia 7 times. During that job, because we were out in the rain and the cold and sometimes waiting at cars to find people to issue warrants and citations. So it was a rough job for many years.
I wouldn't have thought we would have had all those years ago that many parking violations.
I could write anywhere between 125 to 200 tickets a day.
Truly, that's shocking. Right. And people are worried about parking right now. Right. And this was
back in the early 80s.
35 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was a little different. We had parking meters. And it was exciting time because you could be out in the weather and really getting good exercise. But the problem was people look at you like you're public enemy number one. So it got old after a while, and I was ready for change. And that's when the secretarial position came open for planning and human resource. So I tried for that job and got it. And so I was a secretary for 2 departments. Eventually they split, and I chose to stay with the planning side, which was lucky because that really gave me the opportunities to grow and advance in my career. I was only parking control for 8 years, so the rest of my time has been in the community development department and planning.
Was Paul Benoit there then at that time?
Yes, he's the one who hired me, and I stayed with him for quite a few years until he moved to California. He was a great mentor because even though I was, I don't want to say just the secretary, but I was doing the secretarial, administrative type work, there was a planner. And he would let me help and do things. He didn't just answer questions and say, do it this way or this way. He would explain why things were done. And so it gave me the opportunity to learn how to interpret the code. And so I would constantly want to learn more, and he allowed me to learn more. And as the planner would go on vacation or onto between planners when someone would leave, he'd let me take on more and more of the planner's smaller duties until I learned how to do it. And that gave me the ability to grow and improve myself.
You were learning in a real life, real time experience,
right?
Not from a book. You were right there seeing, the workings, the inner workings of the city. And then you just wanted to learn more all the time. And
yes,
even though you didn't have a degree in planning, you said, here's an opportunity. I'm just going to keep learning.
Right. I love to learn. I jokingly say I'm a sponge. I want new information all the time. And so with that extra learning, I would read books. You know, I got a lot of the planning books. I went to a lot of trainings and conferences, and articles would come in. I have these massive files that I save articles and read them and refer to them when I need to. But it was just constantly learning until came a point where Paul said, you're ready. Would you like the position? It's open. And so it was scary, but I took the chance and became the city planner 13 years ago. And I've grown even since then. You're constantly changing and improving, hopefully. But one of the things I wanted to do, my goal for being the planner, was to find ways to make the code work for people. I didn't want the code to be there as a deterrent or a block. Instead, I tried to learn why the code said what it did. Not just that you had certain setbacks or certain heights, but what was the reason behind it so that you could interpret it, and that gives you the flexibility to apply it properly and help people through it rather than just saying, these are the codes, this is the law, period.
So the intention of what the code meant. So would you say, if you were to describe the position of a city planner, is it enforcing codes which have been in place, you know, for many, many years? I mean, codes can be changed too, right? Or, I mean, I don't really know how codes all work.
A code is a living document. Your community changes with time. Construction methods change, the environment changes, so you're always having to upgrade your code. The state even requires that periodically you review your entire code to make sure that it meets all of your current needs and the state needs and all building codes and things. And so what you have to do is look at it and see what the intent is of where you want your community to go. And you have another document called a comprehensive plan. And that's your vision document that says where you want your community to go. And then you build your codes on that. So you're always looking to the future, 20 years at least, to see where are we now and where do we want to go? What do we want to, what character do we want for our community? And that character is what you build into your vision document and then your codes are trying to implement what your goal is.
So as a city planner, then you are interpreting this documentation, you have a blueprint for where the city's going, and then you're working on enforcing them, but you're also working with the public to explain why. And then what is a typical day like? Do people come to you and say, I know that this section of the code says X, but look, in this case, I mean,
there's a variety of things. Every day is different, and that's what I like about the job. You get calls constantly from realtors or people trying to buy property. I'm looking at this property. What can I do? That's usually the question, what zone is it in? And our policy is I don't answer the question you ask. I answer the question you should have asked. And so I give you the information you ask for, but I also try to give you what you need to know if you're going to purchase a property or if you have property and want to develop it already. And so it's interpreting the code and making it work for you. You come in with an idea, then I can help you evolve your project to where it can comply with the code. People will come in and they want to do something specific, and maybe it can't be done by the code, but you sit down and you work through the issue with them and say, if you tweak this or if you do this a little bit different, then it can fit into the code. But then with that, you always find issues with the code where you can improve. And we're always amending the code and trying to find better ways. And that's what we're in right now with the Riverfront Vision Plan. We're amending the code to address the vision that we saw in that document and that protection of our waterfront. And so those code revisions now are reflecting that newer plan.
And we are going to talk about the Riverfront Vision Plan in just a minute. When you are talking about Astoria, and Astoria is, I think everyone agrees, and the word unique is certainly overused, but it is a singular place. And the juxtaposition of all these things that come together, which normally would not work very well here. And so you as a planner are looking at things in context. You're trying to help people understand that you don't just come in and say, I want to do this. You have to say, wait, let me learn, what is this city all about? What's this town about? What is the character and how do we preserve it? Because that's kind of what you were saying, that it's about context and character.
Correct. We have to identify ourselves. And I've always tell people, we're not a city, we're a community. It's one big family, and that family has to get along. Families fight. Families have difference of opinion. But that family has a character, and that character is Astoria. And it's our job to preserve that character that gives you that sense of where you want to be. I tell large developers when they come from out of the area, you're coming to Astoria for a specific reason, and that's because you saw something here that you liked and that you thought you could use, whether it be a motel or a new business or whatever. And I said, my job as planner is to help you with your vision of what you want to do here, but in the meantime, preserving the very character that brought you here. Because if your project comes in and destroys that character, it's not good for our community and it's not good for their project. I jokingly tell them, this is our sandbox. You can come in and play, but you got to play by our rules.
Well, it is a conundrum. It is a conundrum. Yes. Absolutely. Good for you. That's a great way to say it. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns, and I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, my guest is Rosemary Johnson. She is the city planner for the city of Astoria, Oregon. Although I think tomorrow is your last day.
Today?
No, today's your last day. Yes. But however,
but
you're
staying
until they find another planner. There'll be a search. So Rosemary is still going to be working as city planner, even though she is officially retiring and is planning to go on lots of trips. However, you still love Astoria and you are committed to this town and you will live here and be here.
Yes, we are retiring here and staying here. We have an Italianate home, 1880, that we're restoring. And one of the things I hope in retirement is to be able to help my husband, who's borne the brunt of the home repair. He's there every day working on the house. And now I hope to be able to help him a little bit more so that I can finally have a working bathroom. And
you are a real Astorian. Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. The houses have great character. Maybe not all of the amenities some folks would be used to, but the trade-off is worth it.
It just takes time, energy, blood, sweat, tears,
yes,
and money.
It's true. Well, all right. So let's talk a little bit about change and the Riverfront Vision Plan and the fact that there's also going to be so much change within the city of Astoria.
Yeah, change is a word that people banter around and fear and sometimes want, but change can be good. Change is not a bad thing. If you came here in the 80s and said people did not want it changed then. The locals liked what they had, but people saw that there had to be a change, and change for the good is what you want. And so you have to evolve with time. If we didn't change, we wouldn't have the Mill Pond project, because that used to be a plywood mill that was abandoned and environmentally contaminated. We wouldn't have the Garden of Surging Waves and our Heritage Square downtown. That's where the Safeway store was. We wouldn't have the theater and the Aquatic Center and the OSU Seafood Lab, because that used to be the fairgrounds, a county fairgrounds right in your downtown. Those changes were for the good. You have to always be evolving and changing. And so even though everyone likes what we have now, you still have to continue changing with the times and just make sure that change preserves that character that you want. And so you mentioned the riverfront. The 2006-08 period was when there were a lot of condominiums proposed for the riverfront. And the citizens said, wait a minute, we love our riverfront. We want to see the water. Well, they forget that that was a change. Back in the 1990s, it was overgrown. The railroad was still coming through. And that was not a place you went. No one went down to see the river because you couldn't. It was just overgrown. The railroad decided to abandon their line. And so the city, through the Federal Rails to Trails Act, went in and rail banked the waterfront line. Rail banking means that we become the interim owners of that line, and we preserve it for whatever use we want, which is a trail has to be primary, and we had the trolley. But then if the railroad ever comes back, that line is preserved for them, and they can come back to your community. So we're just an interim owner. We got the line. We organized cleanup days for the riverfront, and we tagged every tree we wanted preserved. And we got out there, hundreds of people with chainsaws and pulling weeds and garbage. And we filled an entire city street down at the foot of 30th Street with brush from people clearing out the waterfront. And all of a sudden, there was the river. People loved it. And so once we got that cleared out, then we started getting grants to build the river trail. The very first section was a two-block section from 15th to 17th. And what we saw there was we had a waterfront vision plan at the time. And it said, don't build a big park for the tourists. Instead, keep a working waterfront and build pocket parks and build a trail that would be used by the locals. If the locals like it, the tourists will come and like it also. But build it for yourself. And that's what we did. The pocket parks at 6th Street, at 14th Street, and several other places along the line. And then block by block, we built the river trail, grant by grant. And we did a lot of public-private partnerships, like the Holiday Inn Express. They built the section behind their hotel. And we did a lot of changes there. The businesses weren't open to the river trail because that was all overgrown. With this change of acquiring, cleaning up the river trail, building the trail itself, the businesses were starting to benefit from this waterfront location. They started opening up their stores to the river. They didn't have doors to the river in the past. And so you started seeing a lot more interaction and the economy going up. So the change and that riverfront helped the economy grow. But the key was you had to keep that working waterfront. One of the places people love is walking through the fish canneries and all of the processing and seeing the fish move right in front of you. That's exciting. That's what makes us unique, that grit that is Astoria. And that's what we have to preserve, that working waterfront, and not just make it a cutesy trail. So there's a lot of things there. With the new Riverfront Vision Plan, as a result of the condominiums and other buildings that were going to be built on the river, currently and back then, you could have buildings, the solid waterfront, and in most areas with no building height. You could completely lose all view of the river, and that's what we didn't want. So the Riverfront Vision Plan, the new one that we did a few years ago, said, keep your working waterfront, but let's preserve more vistas and views. And that's what we're doing right now. We have an adopted Riverfront Vision Plan that says a combination of that working waterfront and the vistas and views. And now we have to put that into the code that actually implements it. And that's where we're right now in that process. And what we have to remember is that while we need to protect the vistas and views, those are private properties adjacent there. And if we take away all of their right to develop their property, we're taking a monetary amount away from them. Protecting those vistas and views is adding monetary value to their property. So there's a nice balance that you have to get. And so you want to make sure that you still have economic growth and economic vitality working waterfront, but then also protecting those vistas and views that add to that economics. And so there has to be that good balance. I think all of us would love to see the entire waterfront just pure, but that's not reality. You have to have the economy that can support it. Without that economic base, then you don't have the ability to maintain and keep those that the tourist and the local views and amenities that we like.
I think that's well said. There's probably a lot of fear because people don't want to turn into a kind of touristy town. And I think that's why you said if you must preserve the character and it must be for Astorians and for locals, and then everyone, visitors and other people alike, will enjoy it. And that is, again, the conundrum, the challenge between, you know, development and no development and finding that balance, that
right.
Somehow that middle ground that's going to work, and again, to preserve the character. I also would like to talk quickly about the many changes that are happening at the city of Astoria. There are 7 positions. What's going on at the city that maybe a lot of people still aren't quite aware of?
Right. It's an unusual time because you have 7 positions open right now. My job is the planner. The city manager job is open, and everyone knows that Brett Estes has been offered that job. If he takes city manager job, if that all comes about, then the community development director's job will be open. The finance director has to be filled. And then Willis, after his many years of being mayor, has stepped down. And so that position is open, and 2 city council positions. So we could see lots of changes, and it's going to be different. Willis has left a great legacy in this community and has guided us through many changes to where we are today. And he is someone who has helped that change along. It's been a wonderful transition, and the city will miss him.
You've made an important point that we can't stand still in time. We, even though we love to preserve the present moment at all times, you know, like we just I want to freeze my daughter just as she is right now. This is the perfect age, you know. It things do keep evolving and changing. And so having an engaged citizenry, having people involved, you're passionate about the city. You're still going to be here. You're going to be involved. And all of you who listen, if you live on the North Coast and particularly if you're in the city of Astoria or you come and spend time here in the city, being involved in, you know, what's happening locally is really vital.
Yes, people need to be involved. And that's where I said it was a community. And being involved in a community and an active member of your family is important. And so as a family, we have to help each other volunteer. And I intend to volunteer somewhere. I'm not sure where yet. But you have to be able to evolve, and we're all growing, we're all changing. The economy changes, your industries change, signage changes. You have, you know, different types of equipment that come in, and so you can't just stay a moment in time. I'm a Civil War reenactor, and if I stayed in that time, I wouldn't have working bathrooms and faucets and things. And so you have to evolve with the time, but keeping that character that you want and making sure that you preserve who you are while doing those changes that are for the good.
That, Rosemary, that's just so well said. Gosh, we didn't even get to talk about the fact that there were some exciting things happening. Do you want to say a little tiny bit about what might be happening on at the end of 16th Street across from Custard King?
Oh, we have a great project coming in there. The new owners have torn down the old dry cleaners place and are going to be placing a building there with some eating and drinking and some retail. Won't tell you much more than that. It's exciting, and I think everyone's going to be really pleased with the new building.
And it's only going to be two stories, right?
Correct.
See? So, I mean, you've done such a good job of trying to make that balance happen. We have just a couple minutes left, Rosemary. We could talk for a couple of hours, I think. Please, anything else you'd like the listening audience to know about, you know, either your career? I know you have two sons. You're going to travel. You're going to spend more time with them. Anything else you'd like the listening audience to know?
Just that I love this community, and I think everyone just has to realize that we all have to get along and understand each other's opinions and make it the community we want.
Yeah, even if we don't agree, we need to have conversations. That's
correct.
An important thing, and engage. Passion is a good thing.
Correct.
Rosemary, thank you so much for your time, your dedication, and I'm thrilled we're not losing you. You're staying here.
Thank you.
We'll find you at work hammering and working on your house.
Oh, yes. Yes, and playing with my grandkids.
Yes, and we may have to come bring you back from time to time as things change, because we didn't really even get to talk about some of the things that you were the proudest of being involved with, some of the things that there's just a lot more. But thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Well, we will be seeing Rosemary Johnson around town again, one of the 100 women who made Astoria what it is in the last 200 years. Terry, thank you so much. Our fabulous engineer, Terry Wilson, and also my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brun for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath.